Welcome, ladies, gentlemen, fellow slaves of the global plantation. The Vinnie Eastwood Show is bad news. It's like the news, but so much worse. It's the lighter side of genocide. Just because we're being exterminated doesn't mean we can't enjoy it. Otherwise, what's the point of being killed? The Vinnie Eastwood Show, where the only thing worse than living in a high-tech global police state run by child-trafficking Satanists is Vinnie's jokes. And my very special guests are Kyle Barkley and Nick Bush joining us to talk about the Marsden Point Refinery. And I've got a little bit of a technical issues in the studio here that I have to sort out in the meantime. So I'm going to leave you in the capable hands of Carl and Nick. Carl, can you just give people a bit of a backgrounder about who you are, what it is you do, and then on to Nick too.
Good morning, you all. I'm Carl Barkley. I'm a 66-year-old engineer / farmer. I've been on the road for the last 12 months campaigning for people to buy back control of Marsden Point Oil Refinery, New Zealand's only oil refinery. The way they do that is buy some shares in Channel Infrastructure, which used to be New Zealand Refining Company. Tomorrow, Tuesday the 30th, I'll be in Wellington for the annual shareholders meeting. I think Nick's coming to join us as well. And any shareholder that's a shareholder, please be there if you can. Doesn't matter if you're a part of Sharesies or a registered shareholder, you're entitled to be there and don't listen to what the board says. The board has told everybody not to vote for me or my resolution number 5, which is to stop the destruction of our refinery and get some engineers to come and look at it, tell us what sort of damage has been done and what sort of cost and time frame it will take to get the thing operational again. Don't listen to what the government says about billions of dollars. I don't think... it's going to be anywhere near half a billion dollars. $500 million is probably all we need to get this thing operating again. If we don't, this country's going to run out of fuel. For 58 years, this refinery successfully supplied us with almost 70% of our petrol and diesel, 89% of our jet fuel, 120,000 tonne of bitumen, CO2 and sulphur. We need this thing operating ASAP. The globalists have been in control of the management of it, the board. As far as I'm concerned, the whole board needs to go. We've got the opportunity to vote 3 of them off the board with this election, because 3 of them are standing for re-election. So resolutions 1, 5, 6 and 7 vote 4, and I'm voting, against for 2, 3 and 4. Are the 3 that need to go. So, and then we'll come back and challenge the rest of the board. There's only six members on the board, and I'm sure we can find some other people capable of helping us run this refinery. There's previous board members and staff that have got expertise in the refinery that we need them on the board, and we'll turn this thing around. And once we turn this around, it's New Zealand's security and sovereignty is in this refinery. It was built originally in 62 to give the country fuel security. Every time there's been a fuel crisis around the world, different governments have invested money into it to get it bigger and better. And recent times it's been made more efficient and more eco-friendly. But for some reason, our governments gave it to the 5 oil companies. I got the date there, but I haven't got it in front of me. And it was given to them. Wasn't sold to them, it was given to them, and ever since they've been screwing us because they're not paying the normal fee price to refine their crude oil, and so they're getting it cheaply refined and then saying, oh, well, we've got to go somewhere else, we go offshore. We need this refinery for our security. Doesn't matter what the cost of the fuel is, the government gets about, I don't know, 58% tax out of it, and the rest of the true value of the fuel is... not that much, is it, when you take 58% of the tax out of it? So the government's talking about getting rid of fuel tax and then putting it into your registration. You're going to have an e-electronics in your vehicle, and they're going to charge you a hell of a lot more for your registration to offset the fuel tax that's been taken off and given back to you. So they're going to make it look like it's cheaper at the pump, but actually you're going to be paying for it in a different way, same as diesel users pay with road user charges. So I'll leave it at that, and ask us any questions, and I'll come back to you on that.
I'll jump in there on that note.
Well, just before you do, Nick, I'd like to also just acknowledge the presence of our other guest, Daniel, as well. Daniel, welcome to the Vinnie Eastwood Show. I hope you're ready to have a good laugh while we're talking about the most serious issues. So, Nick, I'm so sorry to interrupt. Can you please continue?
Oh, yes, we were just talking about this on a X Spaces last night about the new. Road user charge system. Well, it's not new, it's already active for a few things, but rolling that out into every vehicle. I think Carl told me there's 15 million vehicles in New Zealand actively on the roads last week, and here's a solution looking for a problem. There's no problem. Just because some talking head comes on the One News at 6 p.m. and says, our road funding system is nearly, quote, buggered, with no evidence whatsoever, just a soundbite into everyone's living room, that doesn't mean the system is buggered. It means the system's working fine. The problem is that they haven't been reinvesting that tax, the fuel tax, back into the roading system for the last 50 years, my entire lifetime. At some points it's varied, but at one point it was only 15 cents in the dollar. And our roads are left to rot. We have got, there's no need for we were talking about the word surveillance and the word spying. Surveillance, if you look it up in the dictionary, it's actually you can surveil to do good. But what they are going to use that system for is to do evil, to track and trace, to monitor, to measure your movements around New Zealand. Right, and then by extension not have a freedom of movement in our own nation else, but have a privilege to move. You'll be rationed, you'll be allocated kilometres, or these kilometres will be represented in carbon credits. And of course the more well off, the elites, the scumbags, they will have the ability to travel further or travel whenever they will wish, whereas everyone else will be at the ultimate goal, locked into a 15-minute city, a bit like that movie In Time, where if you don't have the financial ability, you won't be able to leave your town. But if you have got credits, you can go wherever you want. You can pay carbon credits to do whatever you want. But yeah, so they've got a solution looking for a problem, and somehow they're going to market that into the New Zealand public. And of course, our petrol went down to only, I see it over the weekend, over $3 a litre. It went down to $1.50 because all the tax was taken off, but it goes straight back onto your digital, will be tied to you through a digital ID, through your phone, through your computer. Tyranny at the bloody door, guys. I'll get upset in a minute.
You have more into your vehicle also, so at any stage they deem that they don't want you to travel, your vehicle just won't start up.
We were talking about that last night as well, that once you've used up your carbon credits or your mileage or your kilometreage, you won't be locked. There won't be a town-wide lockdown. There will be this is going to be individually rolled out for people. Like, I've used up my carbon credits for the month, but I can't drive my car, and the car will not activate because Joe Biden, and as we has said, that all the new vehicles manufactured or brought onto the US roads will have a kill switch. Now, that these new boxes that they will have a kill switch in them as well. They will not activate. You didn't pay your rates. You didn't pay your tax. You didn't pay your child support. You said XYZ on whatever social media platform. It's just like the Chinese social credit score. Or you didn't take your latest mRNA weapon of mass destruction, biological kill shot.
There's a system in New Zealand vehicles now. Bryce McKenzie from Groundswell told us at a meeting recently in Southland that he was driving into Dunedin to watch the cricket, and when he got to the 50K zone, his 2-year-old diesel farm truck, ute, slowed down to 50k. When he got to the 40k sign, it slowed down to 40k, and when it got to the 30k sign, it slowed down to 30k. He said, I never took my foot off the accelerator, but I just had no more control over it. And he said when he went to leave to come out of Dunedin, when he got to the 50k sign, he couldn't get it to go 60, 80k. He had to pull over the side of the road, turn his vehicle off, and switch it back on again for it to reset back to normal. And that's
limp mode. It had been put into limp mode or something, had it? Got a new vehicle.
Yeah. So that's happening in New Zealand already, people.
Indeed. Now, Daniel, could you please introduce us, yourself, who you are, what it is you do?
Hi, I'm Daniel. Can you hear me okay?
Yeah, man.
Yeah.
You might want to put your second headphone in to secure that microphone for you. But, yeah, go ahead.
I have been involved in Martin Good Oil.
Daniel. One second. Nick and Carl, would you be able to mute your microphones? There's a little bit of feedback while Daniel's speaking there. Thank you. Go ahead, Daniel.
Yeah. So, I've been involved in Operation Good Oil for a while. Now, I'm an IT guy working in Linux and open source software. I have a background in mechanical engineering as well. I've really been focused on the shutdown of Marsden Point Refinery. Before it actually happened, I was a shareholder in the company, so I saw this coming and, pretty upset about it. But at the time had no real reach and ability to do anything, so Operation Good Oil forming out of at Marsden really got involved in that and have been active in various things related to that. Really having conversation you guys are having about the road user charges and particularly the ERUC systems that are being proposed, and disgusting. At least with older vehicles, sort of if they wire something, you can always pull it out. But it's a pretty dirty tactic if they're going to try and force electronic devices into our existing vehicles. Not sure if you're aware, I assume you are, about the Operation Good Oil post-refinery report, which was released just over a week ago. It is, which really digs into the shutdown of the Marsden Point Refinery. We initially started on the premise that there was a significant increase in the amount of carbon emissions attached to the fuel that's being imported to New Zealand, much higher than that was attached as a consequence of actually refining our own fuel, even considering the cost of shipping, the emissions related to shipping the crude to New Zealand. Now, so essentially we doubled the emissions that are attached to our fuel. Not that I think that carbon is a particular problem, but the issue is actually the emissions increase is largely in nitrous dioxide, which is actually more of a problematic gas. And going on from there, we started looking into the financials. Basically shutting down the refinery, they said there was no money to be made in refining into the future, it was the fundamental premise behind shutting it down. But had they kept the refinery going 2022, 2023, they would have made between 5 and 8 times the profit that they made of this import facility that they've left themselves with through shutting down the refinery. Once you factor that in, along with the geopolitical situation we find ourselves in with potential for war between Israel and Iran, and the fact that most of the oil goes from the oil going to the Asian refineries goes through the Gulf of Hormuz, within Iran's territory, within Iran's control, they can block that, and if they do so, that's 70% of the oil that may not get there to the Asian rivers that we now rely on to provide us with very expensive fuel that is of dubious quality and and all that goes with all the risks that go with that. So we're left in a pretty precarious situation from a transport fuel security perspective.
So on that note, I'd like to sort of acknowledge the sort of elephant in the room here, which is of course the formerly known as Agenda 21, currently known as Agenda 2030, idea for the plan of the control of all resources around the world. And so energy is one of them, information is another, travel. I think basically every single aspect, like if you could look around you in your room and look at all the items that are there, and if you look at your life and all the things you've ever done, none of those things will be there anymore, and none of those things would have ever happened. Okay, like that's how much control that the system wishes to have. And it won't be like a guy knocking on your door or something like that, you know, somebody you could have an argue with or maybe convince the other way around. It would be artificial intelligence and an irresistible system, something that can get everybody everywhere all the time anywhere, right? That's what they want. And so if we look at the linchpins that the system holds down, it is, I think, an apathetic population, really. An apathetic population are the only thing that's really necessary for this system to come into play. And we most certainly have one of those.
Hell yeah. Sadly, and I think that, key things are, without energy, we can't produce our food. Without food, our society doesn't survive, or the predominant, the majority of our society doesn't survive. And, within 2-3 days of being no food, transport, we're into riots, in our cities. The rural community is a little bit more, insulated from that. Without fuel, they can't run the tractors to continue to farm. Food distribution, becomes a huge issue.
Can I just jump in here now, Vinny?
Yeah,
go ahead, mate.
Rightio. So you're talking about the transportation of our, or the cultivation and transportation of our the farm produce. It's worse than that. These bastards have set us up for absolute failure. Worldwide, let's look at the entire globe. They are closing refineries down all over the show, right? The deep state through Biden closing down refineries all over the US. They are, and I did a little video last week about the Haber-Bosch process, which was invented in 1913, where they were able to use...
Hold on one second, Nick, Carl, and Daniel, can you mute your mics, please? So we can hear Nick a bit more clearly. Go ahead, Nick.
And so the Haber-Bosch process allows us to produce huge amounts of fertilizer to cultivate it, to get a greater yield. And I looked this up before I did the video. I thought, well, what that is? Is it like 2 times or 3 times? No, 600%. 600% yield on land that has been cultivated or has been fertilised directly because of this process that this German bloke came up with, right? You might have heard about the guano that they were mining off islands in the Pacific and Atlantic, and they just basically mine these islands right down to sea level. That's how they didn't have any fertiliser to put onto land, and that's how valuable it was to produce the food. They would go all the way around the world to get this stuff. So, but then this guy came up with the process. right, we can make our own fertilizer, our nitrogen fertilizer, to get our plants to grow 600%. Now, they only had about 2 billion people on planet Earth at the turn of the century, last century. We've got 8 billion. If we turn that process off and we can't produce the food, there will be starvation, there will be famines, there will be total chaos. No, you know. So that's what they're doing. They're attacking the food supply through the oil and gas industry. Right. Now, when you're talking about the CO2 and the nitrogen and the emissions and all that, right? Now, there's a guy on that travels all around the world looking at Michael Young, and he was in Holland as they were attacking the farmers when the farmers were bringing their tractors into town. He said, if you're arguing about CO2, if you're arguing about nitrogen, you're losing because you're trying to defend. They want you to engage them. We all know that CO2 is the food of life. It's like going into Orwell's Room 101 and saying, oh, CO2, plants don't need CO2. That's not what they build their, you know, 2 + 2 = 5. We all know that CO2 is absolutely required for plant life, and then as animals eat the plant life, more life on planet Earth. So more CO2 means more life on planet Earth. They don't want CO2, so they want less life. They want to take over. So then I heard Vinny talk about AI. So the UN and WEF, they want us to cede our very existence to an artificial intelligence. They want the artificial intelligence to tell you how to run your life. No one wants that. This is ridiculous. Why would we cede our existence, our very ability to move, to feed ourselves, to an artificial intelligence, the ultimate in technocracy, and ultimately can be corrupted? That thing will kill. Well, that will murder everyone on planet Earth. Okay, sorry, I just wanted to finish add that, but.
This document here, it doesn't matter. We don't have to have AI to stop this country. This document is called the Petroleum Restraint Act. When the government deems that we're short of fuel, the Governor General and two senior politicians engage this act, and you will be locked down worse than COVID, and there won't be any movement in this country. If you're seen driving your vehicle outside your gate, you'll be classed as adding to the emergency, and you will be taken and put in prison, or put in jail at least. That document has been around for a while. It's gone from a 3-page document to about a 12-page document in the last couple of years since all this crap started happening. And the only people that are going to be using fuel in this country is emergency services, fire, police, ambulance, defence forces. And if there is still a shortage in this country, if you own a business that requires a volume of fuel being stored at your property, under this act, that they can come and confiscate that to keep the emergency services going. Now, this act will stay in power for however long it takes to get the fuel quantities back to New Zealand, supplying us at a sustainable level, which could take 6 months. So in the meantime, our farming friends won't be farming. A diesel truck won't be carting the food to your supermarket, and you will be starving because of the fact that we do not have any fuel in this country anymore. And it's going to be as easy as that. They don't have to lock us out by AIs and whatever else. They could just lock us out by engaging this document and shutting the whole country down. And where's our politicians at? Where's ACT? Where's Winston Peters? Where's National on this? They're all complacent. They all know about it. These documents have been around longer than they've been in power for 100-plus days.
Well, we've been betrayed. It's interesting you said that, Carl, because at the end of 2022...
Nick, I'm sorry. I just have to pop out for a moment. You guys just keep on going.
Okay. At the end of 2022, I did a video. I talked to our local MP here, Andrew Bailey, that evening or the evening before, and talked to him about the refinery. And I realised that these bastards, this is exactly, I said that what you just described, that they will ration the fuel to emergency services and private vehicles will not. I said they won't ban private vehicles, they'll just ban the purchase of fuel, or the access will be denied. You won't have fuel because no boats will be coming. There'll be a war. Look at the Ukraine war. That's been going on for 2 years. Imagine if Iran blows up. We might not get fuel down here for 5 years. We have been set up by Jacinda Ardern and the globalists and the WEF for these things to happen. Just like the Health and Safety Act 2015. After you were into this, Carl, after the coal mine blew up, right? They inserted that so we became biological hazards, or we became, as a human, we were a hazard, okay? And so then they could say you couldn't go into the supermarket because you're a hazard. And that they use that as a coercive mechanism to get you to jab your children up. Yeah, but it's really interesting that you mentioned that. They've actually put that into law. That's exactly what I said. They're going to ration the fuel, right? Well, basically, a police state will be ensued, right? Oh, we can now have our police state. It's all set up. And, yeah, and ACT, the Libertarian Party, he's a fake libertarian. Maybe I can just ask you two that are here. Did you, during last year's election, did you hear any discussion about track and trace of all vehicle movements or having a road user charge installed into older vehicles and mandated into new vehicles? Did you hear anything about that?
No, nothing at all.
No, well, there you go. So I gave these bastards the benefit of the doubt, and it's only in the last 2 weeks that I've gone, hang on, you know, David Seymour has stopped using the tagline, Libertarian Party. I thought, okay, maybe he's listening to me. But if they have gone that far to actually put that in that document 100 days ago, whenever they negotiated it, and didn't inform the, well, they have informed the public last week on TV One News that our system is buggered and we need to roll the system out, right? This is rubbish. This is a spy system. This is another mechanism, a coercive mechanism that will be able to be used against individuals.
Our voting system is only buggered because we've got governments that allowed our Marsden Point oil refinery 2 years before it shut down to actually shut down the bitumen plant because they said it was costing too much in electricity to run it. They didn't need to shut it down. All they needed to do was raise all their price.
The foundation of this is the CO2 lie. Oh, our emissions. They always go back to emissions. Oh, it's too much emissions. Costing us too much in carbon credits.
The bitumen is what started this process because they could have doubled the price of the bitumen and still been a third cheaper than the rubbish they're buying now, which has totally destroyed any road it's been used on, and any road it's been patched for is totally destroyed now. The other thing is once they got past that stage and then they talked about closing the refinery down, it's all about decarbonising New Zealand's fuel supplies. Decarbonising means you stop using hydrocarbons, oil out of the ground, and come up with alternatives. They're biofuels. It's a crock. This country needs diesel, Jet A1, and petrol to keep sustaining its economy for the next 50, 60 years until they can actually prove that hydrogen works and is safe to use. The price of making hydrogen is far more than the price of making petroleum products, and the CO2 levels at Marsden Point.
You're engaging in their lie. CO2 is not a pollutant. CO2 is food and life.
It was a pollutant. CO2.
CO2
was reduced to Marsden Point when they built the Tamahi Ho project and commissioned it in 2015. It reduced 120,000 tonne of CO2 out of that refinery, and it was used by Bok Gas to put it into cylinders and transport it around New Zealand to use in refrigeration, for freezing your veggies, for operation to your body, because CO2 is a safe gas. It does not kill you unless you're in a building that's only contained with CO2.
Yeah, but the foundation of the argument is or their lie, is that CO2 is a pollutant. It's not a pollutant.
It's never been a pollutant.
It's a natural occurring
If you cut back the CO2 levels in the world, the plants will stop producing oxygen and we, the people, will die because we need oxygen to survive, along with sunlight and fresh water. The three most important things in life.
Yeah, can I just interject here? So, one of the key things that's coming out of this is, what do we do about it? One of the reasons why I'm here today is to actually talk about our current actions. So both Carl and I are standing as shareholder nominated directors, candidate directors for Channel Infrastructure. And we have a resolution also which will be voted on at the annual shareholder meeting, which is happening tomorrow afternoon. And that resolution specifically requires the company to put passes, stop decommissioning the refinery, and get an independent engineering company to scope the costing to rebuild the refinery. So we're working hard on that. A group of shareholders, unnamed cafes, Collective Action for Energy Security, they have sent out 3,700 letters, I believe, to which is about three quarters of the shareholders, and that is alerting them to the fact that as per the information contained in the full Operation Goodall post refinery report, that they were ripped off. Two-thirds of the asset base of the company was written off the books when they shut down the refinery as part of that process. Some of it actually before they'd even decided officially to shut it down, and had the shareholders told them that it was going to not make money, when they would have made screeds of much better profits. And the whole, as you've been saying, the whole alternative fuels, low carbon fuels, and hydrogen, is a complete crock of shit.
Well, exactly. So you've got some people in this company, or the shareholders, right? And you've engaged them, but then we look at the wider population, and we're talking about people being apathetic, not really caring, or not really understand, not really. Oh, it's not my wheelhouse, it's not my problem. I expect the government to look after our economy and create the environment where we can be prosperous and then get the hell out of the way, whereas they're actually actively doing things that will make us less prosperous and destitute with this. The refinery is a cornerstone of our energy security.
Absolutely.
And for them to close that down, it's an act of treason. It's an act of treason because we're all aware that there is going to be a war in the Middle East. There is going to be a war. That is, this Ukrainian thing and this Israeli thing, during the summer, that's going to explode. Well, in our winter, that's going to just escalate, and all of a sudden, there won't be any boats coming down to New Zealand, right? There won't be any boats. So Carl's legislation or whatever he had there, that is going, every day I wake up, I find more tyranny. I find more tyranny, and it's bloody horrible. I'll just be, just looking at what he said. Well, that's something that's probably going to happen by Christmas time, that we will be, we can't allow our existing fuel that we've got in New Zealand to be used. So we have to lock everyone down. Okay, you can work from home. And the media will gaslight everyone to the point that, oh, no, it's okay, it's only for 14 days to sort it out.
Yeah.
God, the tyranny, it's quite depressing.
Yeah.
Can we talk about, you were saying that it was actually a money-making enterprise up there at Whangarei, right? And we were refining that the product here in New Zealand and adding the value here in our economy. How could you walk away from that as a nation? We can buy that from Singapore, but they're adding it in their economy and then shipping it down here to dinner and using all the huge heavy oils in a big boat. Well, you bring it down here, you actually capture that value-added added process here. If you actually were honest about the books of New Zealand, that you could not close that down and say, well, look, we're going to close it down. We're going to walk away from X amount of billions of dollars of added value here. So that is that's absolutely disgusting.
And having dug into it, it really begins with that they pulled this off. Although sort of officially we don't know for sure, sort of unofficially it appears that Ampol had a significant part to play and a key part to play in this.
Or Ampol, owned by Vanguard?
It's actually Australian Super Fund that predominantly owns Ampol.
Z Energy was sold, my son is 10, and they privatised 49% of Z Energy, and I wanted to buy some shares, right? And I couldn't. I didn't have any money because I just had two children, like most people don't have any money. But then they went ahead and sold the rest of it to Ampol. That's correct? Z Energy sold to Ampol?
What happened is Ampol started courting. Yeah, from what I understand, Ampol started courting to buy Z Energy already back as far as 2019. One of the things I said is, if we buy it, we want that refinery shut down. The only thing that I can prove is that there was a Radio New Zealand article in November of 2021. So this is after the decision to shut the refinery down. Had gone to the vote and they'd got an overwhelming support for the motion from the shareholders because it's
globalist, a global racketeering.
Yeah.
It's just racketeering because they're manipulating the local economy so they can make more profits and offshore them. This is these people aren't reacting. Jacinda Ardern and Labor government, and the entire caucus, and they're not acting in the best interests of New Zealand long term.
Well, they were desperate to get some money, and because they'd been told by the IMF that they'd spent too much money on COVID. So when Ampol comes along and says, "Oh, well, we'll give you an offer," don't get in the way when we force the shutdown of the refinery. It makes them look good on the books, or a little bit better on the books than they were. Of course they're going to go, "Yeah, okay, you can shut it down, no problem. We'll happily buy our fuel." Never mind the fact that it messes with our trade balance even further.
Yeah, well, that's right. The local, adding the value here in the local economy.
I believe it was about 1.5% increase in our
balance of payments,
imports. Yeah, really? Balance of trade.
It was
fairly significant.
But we've only got. So I did a speech a couple of years ago during COVID about scale manufacturing in New Zealand. So we've got the refinery. We're manufacturing fuel, right? Scale manufacturing. Then you've got the New Zealand Steel, scale manufacturing of steel from iron sands off the West Coast beaches. You've got scale manufacturing of exploration for new oil or hydrocarbons and the extraction. We've got, the extraction, and that's why we don't use our own product here in New Zealand and modify that, had a plan to modify our existing refinery to use our own domestically sourced hydrocarbons is beyond me. Well, it shows how the globalists control our economy and control our politicians, right? But then we've got the aluminium smelter down there, the cleanest aluminium in the entire on the planet, totally run from hydroelectric energy off the bottom of the South Island. And they want to close all those four down. The deindustrialisation of New Zealand, taking away opportunities from Kiwis. And then looking back at the roading system, Auckland's roads are buggered because they're full of cars. When I grew up, there was about 700,000 people in Auckland. Now there's 1.6 million. The mass immigration, the weaponized migration of people into New Zealand, that's why our roads are buggered, because the infrastructure is totally overrun. Overrun, is that a good word? I don't know if that's the right word to call it, but it's maxed out, the infrastructure. The roading system's maxed out. Carl's gone, is he?
Yeah, he'll be back. Okay. So on this point, I'd like to take a chance to note that we're not dealing with people that have a conscience. Okay, this is the problem that people with a conscience have, is they are mentally sane. Okay, so you can reason with them, you can negotiate with them, you can come up with agreements with them, but somebody who is mentally ill, that has a grey matter problem in their brain, that has turned off empathy, that has turned off any form of what you might call logic or decency, and they are obsessed with just, you know, keeping themselves safe and having control of others and stuff like that, and can't actually act any other way and never will. That's the mentality that you need to understand, that these people that you're dealing with who make these kind of decisions actually have. There isn't any negotiating with them. There isn't any reasoning with them. Okay, this is how wars start, I think, because you've got one group of people that will not back down because they're mentally ill, that want to take everything that the people who aren't mentally ill have. And the people who aren't mentally ill realize the threat to their children and their future, and they mobilize to defeat them. Period. And that's what you're trying to do here, isn't it, Daniel? You're trying to actually, in your own small way, like let's say there's 360 degrees in a circle, and this is one degree by which we can secure our freedom. Banking is another, food supply is another, information not being censored is another, and so on and so forth, all the way up to, you know, the spiritual enlightenment of realizing that we're living in a holographic fractal that's being projected by collective consciousness experiencing itself subjectively, but I digress. Where the rubber meets the road is where we need to think about here, the real logic of the situation, because I'm not sure about you guys, but I've been running into a lot of people who've been saying, oh, you can't think negatively, oh, you can't get angry, and my response to that, you know, in an inherent level is, can't get angry at ruthless criminal sociopathic scumbaggery freaking raping the planet and the people and my mind, and, you know, how am I not supposed to be angry at that? How is that not a healthy response?
I'll tell you. I got a call from the cops last week, because I'll tell you a little story. We chased a robber, me and my friend, and we caught him. Well, we tried to catch him, but he pulled out a tire iron at me, and that was right underneath one of these new police security cameras. So I won't go right into it. But so this young lady rings me up, and she says, "Oh, you are a victim," and I'm like, I already told her last time I talked to her. No, I'm not a victim. It was actually quite good fun when I chased that bastard. You know, it wouldn't have been fun getting a tire iron around the head, but that didn't happen. So we, you know, but so the language is so important. I want people to get this, the language. When the cops are dealing with anyone, they want them to embrace being a victim. They want you to be weak and actually feel like a victim in your life. And everyone's, oh, something happened, I'm a victim. And that takes away your strength. No, you should stand up, because the cops aren't there. That guy was trying to break into my mate's car. I wasn't going to chase him, but he chased him, and I thought, well, I better go with him. I bumped into him first. But the police are projecting this victimhood into the society. So, we can't act. And so if you do actually defend yourself, if you do punch the bastard in the head, right, as he's attacking you or someone you like, so one of your friends, you're now the assaulter. Hang on a minute. You know, that's what happened last week with regard to that. But you were talking about these politicians. Now, these people are weak. They have no moral compass. And so JT, this American comedian guy, was talking about evil. And so does evil come out and say, oh, I'm evil? No. Evil comes out and says, oh, I'm all nice and I'm non-threatening. I'm non-threatening and I'm all dressed up in a suit, or even better for the globalists is they put a woman up there because women are not threatening, right? But inside they have no moral. They're weak and they'll be manipulated. Whereas people that stand up and have courage and say, no, that's not right. That's not right. You cannot, you know, you shouldn't be doing that. We have been gaslit to say, well, we're crazy. No. What's happened is evil is manifesting through these weak individuals. Yeah. But what do you think of that?
Well, I love the whole concept that if a woman comes and takes away your freedom and enslaves you and exterminates you, and you say something about it, like you don't disagree, people's first response is, what have you got against women, Vinny? What have you got against women? Why are you so hateful? Why are you so misogynistic? I don't know. Maybe it's because I'm tyrannophobic. You know, maybe I've got a fear of being enslaved and subsequently exterminated by ruthless criminal sociopathic scumbaggery, regardless of whether or not they do it to me with their dick or their vagina. Okay, it's inconsequential the form in which tyranny comes, that so to speak. But the reason,
isn't it? It's all designed to shut you up.
Well, it's about getting everybody into a form of disagreement onto this point, into these stupid things. And I've got a story about this. So a story goes that there was once these two ascended masters from two completely different religions. And these religions hated each other. One religion thought the other group were a bunch of dicks, and the other religion thought the other guys were a bunch of pussies. But they both shared a very similar belief in their religion, that if you meditated hard enough, you would be able to ascend and see the mountain of truth. And so these two guys from these two separate religions actually did it this one time, and they came out on opposite sides of the mountain of truth. First guy comes out, and the mountain of truth looks like it's got these two big boulder formations down the bottom and a shaft that goes up with a little sort of mushroom cap stone formation on the top. And the other guy comes out the other side, and the mountain's sort of like this big sort of like cave sort of convex structure with this sort of riblets that are going into it. And first guy yells out, hey, it looks like a dick, you pussy. And the other guy says, no, it looks like a pussy, you dick. To which he replies, don't call me a dick, you pussy. To which he says, don't call me a pussy then, you dick. Now, the moral of the story is that sometimes we're being too much of a dick or too much of a pussy to see that other people's perspectives are valid. Okay? And that's what we're dealing with here in our society, is we have people who are unable to listen to other people's points of view to look for the truth within them.
Your self-expression is a weapon. Didn't you listen to Jacinda at the United Nations? That's all we got left, is our self-expression. That's a weapon of war. Does the population think we're at war with our own government? I don't think so. I don't think I'm at war. But she thinks she's at war with us. Then you got Albanese last week saying, you know, free speech is a weapon and it must be controlled. These bastards, mate. They do not want to listen to us. It's not us, it's them.
Yeah, that's right. I'm breaking up with the government, and it's not me, it's you.
That's right. They are the ones that don't want to listen. They are the ones that are authoritarian or totalitarian, let's admit it. All socialist scumbags, all socialist scumbag systems always go to the gun, to the totalitarian, you know, if you're not going to agree with it, well, we'll just kill you, send you off to the gulag, you know. They can't, their system is so shit, it's so crap, and they bloody well know it. But slowly but surely, they're moving the goal, the expanding, you know. And of course, another thing, another insight is human adaptability is our greatest strength, but it's also our greatest weakness. Because if something's not directly attacking us, we will just adapt around it. And so that becomes a weakness, because that is a threat. We haven't seen the implications of our refinery being closed down yet. And okay, well, we'll just adapt. But for us that are looking forward and seeing where this will lead, and Carl's just outlined that, they've already got the legislation to lock us in our homes, destroy everything. Phone's going, sorry. You know, back when we were in cavemen days, if we saw a friend of ours get eaten by a saber-toothed tiger, we go, oh, that saber-toothed tiger is a danger. You know, we better keep away from that saber-toothed tiger. But if we see a stick with a, well, what was a, you know, something, and you can walk around and have a look at it, and it doesn't kill mum or doesn't kill my kids, well, it's not really a danger. But so our life experiences tell us what's a danger and what's not a danger. So when we see a halo camera installed on the side of a road and no one's getting tickets, our friends aren't getting tickets, our friends aren't getting fined for doing it, we go, oh, well, that's not a danger. That's not actually attacking us. That's not actually taking our resources. That's not doing anything yet. But it's being normalised into the environment. So we adapt to have these things here and go, oh, they're all right, don't worry about it. You know, we've got better things to do, you know. Now, got to play golf.
Nick, I'm so sorry to interrupt, but it would be good. We could go for another couple of hours if we could, but I unfortunately can't. I've got another show to be on in just a few minutes here. So if you've got a final, Daniel, I'd like to hear from you about your project, how people can get involved, where people can go, and what they can do in as possibly brief a way as you can before I have to jump on the next show.
Yeah, thanks for that. So at this stage, we've done pretty much everything we can. We've got as many shareholders buying shares as we can, and tried to reach out to as many of the shareholders as we can. It really comes down to the annual shareholders meeting, and myself, Carl, and Sean Rush, who's a oil and gas lawyer that's going to be fronting our Resolution 5, which is about stop decommissioning and cost the rebuild of the refinery, our ability to actually reach the institutional shareholders that we hope we're going to turn up for the meeting. I'll be working hard on preparing my speech to them. I managed to pull the next couple of minutes out of my introduction of myself as a candidate director, and the focus is we need to change the direction of the company. We need to rebuild this refinery. We need to make it able so it can process New Zealand crude in emergency at least, reliably so. But ideally we should be using all the New Zealand crude we can get, reduce reliance on overseas crude. And we need to build a decent stock of the overseas sour crude, which is necessary for bitumen for our roads. We do need it. We can't get out of the oil that is produced here in New Zealand. So just good thoughts, and sort of we're working on this.
Have you seen the trailer I put together?
No.
A refinery on one side and an oil rig on the other, and it says, "No energy, no future. Stand up for your future."
Oh, I'd love to see that.
I'd love to drive it to Wellington to be.
Crank it on the Instagram for you, mate.
Yeah, well, I'm on Instagram, but I don't really know how to use Instagram. More on X, to be honest. And
All right, well, Telegram. Guys, unfortunately, that is all the time we have left. So Nick Bush on Telegram and
Napoleon Bush. Remember?
Okay. Napoleon Bush on Telegram. And Daniel, what's your website there?
I don't currently have a real website, but operationgoodoil.co.nz
is
where you'll find the report that we and we'll be keeping people up through the air and through Operation Good Oil Facebook page.
All right, gentlemen, thank you so much for your time today, and thank you very much, ladies, gentlemen, and hermaphrodites, my fellow slaves of the global plantation. The Vinnie Eastwood Show is bad news. It's like the news, but so much worse. It's the lighter side of genocide. Just because we're being exterminated doesn't mean we can't enjoy it. Otherwise, what's the point of being killed? The Vinnie Eastwood Show. Where the only thing worse than living in a high-tech global police state run by child-trafficking Satanists is Vinny's jokes.